Thanks for clicking on our podcast. This is John Fraser, and with my partner in wine down in the Cape, Michael Olivier, each week we taste the very best that the Cape has to offer in wines or spirits, whatever tickles our fancy, and hopefully it'll tickle yours as well. Well, for the second week in a row, in fact, for the third week in a row, we are trying a red from the Cape, a red wine. Today, it's a 2012 Shiraz, but before we go into details on the wine, just to remind those who may have stumbled across this podcast that we are privileged to have down in Cape Town, along a line up to Joburg, if that makes sense, one of South Africa's foremost food and wine writers, an expert on all things gastronomic and alcoholic, Michael Olivier. Michael, great to chat to you.
Thanks, John. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us this evening. And in the Joburg studio, we've got the same band of, not brothers, but good mates that we've had for the last two tastings from Prosopa Restaurant, which I always mispronounce, in Pretoria, Dino Fegas.
Hello, John. Nice
if you're to be if you're in Waterkloof, tell Dino you know me and you may not get a table. Jeff Osborne from Gumtree Auto, former head of the RMI, one of the authoritative voices of the automotive sector in South Africa, but you don't mind the odd bit of wine lubrication as well.
Also well pronounced, John. Thank you. Good to be here.
And pronounced, he's also legendary in his own way. And that's a good thing. Jeremy Sampson, great to have you back.
A good vintage, John. Thank you.
A good vintage, yeah. Well, I don't know, a bit over the hill. And last, not least... You're always last but not least, Malcolm McDonald. Great to see you back with us. And of course, for those of you who don't happen to be intimately involved with the posting of these podcasts, Malcolm is the one who does all the hard work and edits out some of my bad jokes. Unfortunately, a few slip through. Okay, that's enough waffle from me. The estate is Groot Constantia, which I think I'm correct in saying is one of the iconic wine estates of South Africa. It's also one that we have tasted something else of recently, and it's also one of those estates which was hit by fire quite recently as well. This is the 2012 Shiraz. Michael Olivier, remind me, have I got anything right on that?
Yeah,
apart from the date of the wine.
I think everything. I think Groot Constantia recently took top honours at the Taj Classic Wine Awards. And then the 2013 Chardonnay on the Chardonnay du Monde in France won the award for the best Chardonnay in the world. Boula Gerber, who's been at Groot Constantia for some time, obviously now knows his vineyards well, knows how the cellar operates, and he's making some really brilliant wines up there. He did whisper almost conspiratorially to me one day that he thought that Shiraz would be the grape of Groot Constantia. And this is a really big boy of a wine. It comes from, the vineyards are all on the slopes of the Constantia Mountain. So they have the benefit of the cool breezes coming over from the Atlantic. And then at night, what they call nocturnal inversion, where you have the rising heat and the cool air or false bay gets sucked up into those vineyards. So there's a longer hang time. There's a much greater color and flavor in the grapes as a result of that. These grapes are hand-picked. They're open fermented in big open tanks. And then they do the pump overs, usually for about the first half of the fermentation, where they pump juice from below the cap, because the skins all float to the top. They pump juice from below the cap over the cap, which has the effect of cooling the cap, but has the effect of removing the color and the flavors, etc., from the skins. It goes into barrels for just over a year. About 38% of the new French oak, and then the others are all second, third, and fourth fill barrels. In the glass, it sort of almost looks like ruby Indian ink, if there is such a thing. It's so dark and opaque, and very sort of classical Groot Constantia nose. Lots of aroma going on there. Wonderful black berries. There's a grind of black pepper. There's a little bit of that lovely roadside fennel that grows wild on the roadsides here, and then a little sort of bouquet of violets there as well. In the mouth, it's just this big, beautiful, rich, ripe grape flavors. Nice fine tannins. It's drinking really well now, but of course, again, it's a 2012. It could probably go for another 10 years or so. It's a big boy of a wine. It's a wine that needs food.
Well, Michael, while you were describing that, I couldn't quite work out whether this wine was a floral arrangement, a salad, or a dessert. You put so many different ingredients into what is basically grape juice with a bit of booze thrown in. I am being facetious. This is a very pleasant wine. I found it a little bit aggressive when first poured, but it's settled down in the glass, and I'm settling down and enjoying it. Class stuff from a classy wine producer in South Africa. And nice to see that we can do Shiraz that the Australians should be a little worried about, because, as you know, they've made that one of their main varietals in that country.
Yes.
But yeah. What do I know? Malcolm McDonald, our red wine fundy, you enjoy it?
Yeah, definitely a Shiraz from the first moment you taste it.
You cheated, you read the bottle.
I actually didn't see the bottle, and I haven't seen it yet. But it's got a nice rich flavour. It's definitely something I'll look into getting some of. But I agree that it should be with food. It really, really could do with having a nice steak or even a roast of some sorts. It'd be going nicely, very nicely with a Shiraz. But it's one of my favorite types of wine. And this is probably in the top few of the Shirazes that I've had.
Well, that's no mean accolade. Jeremy Sampson.
And again, the brand, Fruit Constantia, and I'm very jealous of Michael living just down the road, as I recall. It's sort of, he can walk up and have a look and see what's going on. Lovely, lovely wine, lovely complexity. We know the quality of Fruit Constantia, everything they touch. Just question again for you, Michael. Shiraz versus Syrah. Is it the same? Is it different? Why do we call it still Shiraz? What are your thoughts?
Okay, first of all, it is the same grape. And I think in South Africa, what we've done is the more sort of, I was going to be facetious to say, the more sort of Dolly Parton wines, you know, full-fronted, lots of fruit up front, tend to be called Shiraz because they're sort of modeled on the Australian style. And then there are people who are making a more sort of restrained, dignified, elegant style, more in the sort of Rhone, Southern French style, and they tend to call theirs Syrah. And then, of course, there's the added confusion of Petit Syrah, which has nothing to do with Shiraz at all.
Well, thanks for totally confusing us on that one, Mike. No, you didn't. I think you made that very clear. Jeff Osborne, are you enjoying this Chrut Constantia?
Well, certainly no Dom Blanc. It has a delightful voice.
Neither are you, Jeff.
Funny enough, over the last year or so, I too, like Malcolm, have favoured Shiraz, and whenever I'm in a restaurant, I go straight to the Shiraz choices and see what they have there. So, this for me, I must concur, is particularly smooth and very, very nice. Full-bodied, I think it does great justice to the Shiraz grape.
I'm talking full-bodied. Dino, you're enjoying it.
It's a lovely wine. Once again, Bulacharba has definitely come into his own. Shiraz is coming up as well on sales and wine lists. Pinotage a little too, but Shiraz, I find, is moving forward faster.
And on this particular wine, for me, I would just sit there and drink it with anything from soup to ice cream and most stuff in between, because, as you know, I tend to favour red wines over white when I'm dining out. And is there anything, Dino, which you would suggest one of your customers should pair with this wine? Maybe something meaty, something robust?
I think something robust, John, like a nice kudu steak, perhaps, with a sweet, spicy jus would be lovely with this.
Michael, you've already talked about Dolly Parton's busts. This is a busty sort of wine. What would you pair with it?
Yeah, look, I think you want something fairly sort of lusty to go with it. Last week I did a topside, which I did in a casserole with with herbs and onion and carrot and celery, and I put a whole bottle of red wine into it. And at the end, when I finished doing the sauce, I mean, the whole thing was just so, so delicious. You really want something that's got a bit of guts and flavor to it. Nice venison casserole now with the venison season coming up.
Well, I've got lots of guts, and I really do enjoy the flavor of this wine. But what do I know, Malcolm McDonald? What would you eat while drinking this?
Well, I mean, I think even a little bit earlier, oxtail was mentioned. I think this would be lovely with that. But, you know, being in South Africa, we get fantastic steak. A nice medium or medium rare steak with some of this would be just perfect.
Yeah.
And, of course, Jeff Osborne, you can have very simple food with a very complex wine and enjoy both, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Except, of course, porridge would be out of the question.
No, you put whiskey in porridge, at least in the part of the world my ancestors come from.
No, I agree. It's very versatile in terms of what you can accompany it with. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Any thoughts, Jeremy?
Well, I have to say I'm a bit confused because, you know, we've been talking about big boy wines.
We're tasting wine, Jeremy.
Dolly Parton, muscular wines, Dame Blondes. All I can say is the pepperiness of this wine is so superb that on a cold, high-felt night, I couldn't think of anything much better.
And the winemaker is a redhead.
Yeah,
that's his problem.
No one's perfect.
Paint your palette blue and grey. Yeah, my Michael Olifier, question for you. When I first poured this wine, I found the nose on the wine, the smell of the wine, the aroma, a little bit overpowering. It said to me, this is the sort of Shiraz I don't like very much. As I said earlier, after a while it settled down in the glass and I'm now enjoying it. Now, you can go to some really poncy restaurants where they will decant the wine. They'll take it from the bottle it's travelled in, stick it in some other sort of container, maybe let it sit on the sideboard for a while before they pour it into your glass. Is that all theatre, or is there some real merit in decanting a wine? And what sort of wine should you decant?
Yeah, look, I don't think it's theatre because I know what a difference it makes. You know, especially with a wine like this. I mean, a really great Cote Constantia Shiraz. What if you took it, extracted the cork, and then glugged it into a decanter and took it straight to the table, there would already be a difference in the wine. I don't believe in pulling the cork out and leaving it on the sideboard and saying, well, it's been breathing all afternoon, because you've got probably a 50-cent piece size surface in contact with the air. But it does make a difference, and especially in a really sort of important wine. I'm a great believer in decanting, and sometimes just into a jug, you know, because it works just as well as a cut glass decanter.
Malcolm McDonald, do you ever decant wines, or are you ever offered that option when you're dining out?
Well, I've never really seen that happen. If I open a bottle of wine that I'm expecting to be really good and I don't quite like it, I'll decant it and then see if it's any better. And I don't claim to be more scientific than that. It's just sort of, if I don't really like it, I think, well, it really should be better than that. Decant it, see if it makes a difference. If it's improved, then that's great.
Jeremy, are you a bit of a decanter?
I just find wine fascinating, how it can change within a short time as the temperature changes. You know, as Michael says, pour it into a jug, you've got to change. I've seen actually someone put a liquidizer into it for 5-10 seconds and check it as well, especially if it's an older wine. But I think this is the theatre of wine, that over time it can change quite dramatically. That's why, John, you've always got to have 2 or 3 bottles lined up.
Now you're
sage talking. Advice.
Jeff Osborne.
Yeah, John, I generally make a practice, if I'm entertaining, of decanting wine, but also because of the temperature issue, so-called room temperature, I'll decant it and then put it in the fridge, and Jeremy can correct me here, but my theory is that hot air rises, so the act of putting it into the fridge accelerates the breathing process, but it's something that I always do.
Well, you put entertaining and hot air into the same phrase, so obviously one heads for the wine at the Osborne household.
Absolutely.
Dino, do you have pretentious Ponzi people in your restaurant asking for stuff to be decanted, or do you wander around
everyone
pretentious
except,
and Ponzi?
Everyone except you, John. No, I will accommodate guests who want their wine decanted. If I feel that a wine is perhaps younger and would benefit from decanting, I'll definitely offer it to my guests.
And you chat a lot to winemakers, you have wine evenings. Have any of them suggested that the best way to serve their wines, or are they just happy to see people schlepping away?
Funny enough, a good friend of mine, David van Velden of Overgaal Wines, doesn't believe in decanting. He prefers not to.
Interesting.
I just thought, if I may throw this one in, that a lot of restaurants where you have the choice of having the wine by the glass, and they'll often pour it into a carafe in that process, but very often I've had a wine that tastes absolutely stunning by the glass, because I guess it had was open perhaps the day before or whatever. So yeah, it creates a whole new dimension.
Or maybe they just blended it with some nice Ribena or something to give the red that extra flavour. And of course, Michael Oliphant, one of the things that I did for a while, I haven't really added to my collection, is I inherited a few very nice decanters, and I bought one or two in my time. There are few things more pleasant than on a Sunday wandering around a flea market, or maybe even one of the more upmarket flea markets that they call an antiques fair, and stumbling across a nice bit of glassware. They don't have to be antique, they don't have to be too expensive, but they do look nice on a sideboard, don't they, decanters, especially when they've got booze in them.
Absolutely, yeah.
Malcolm? Are you adding to your aesthetic appearance in your household?
No, not really.
Jeremy, do you have any decanters? And I'm not talking about the magazine.
John, I do have. But they tend to be the old-fashioned ones, more the sort that you perhaps put sherry or port into. But I must say that I'm trying to drink my red wines a little bit older now, and they certainly benefit from decanting.
Jeff, do you have any wine-related paraphernalia in the house? Something
well,
attractive?
Well, if it's really, really good, John, then I'll have it intravenously, so I always have a syringe on hand.
You've stumped me on that one. And finally, do you share my delight in walking into someone's dining room and seeing nice things on the side, even if they're not used very often, old plates, old decanters, and wine-related stuff?
Sure, I absolutely love just buying decanters for the sake of buying them, of course, to use them sometime. But there's a nice Riedel one I have my eye on. It's called Eve. And I think it stands about a meter tall, looks like a cobra, and is just beautiful, beautiful. I saw it being demonstrated, and it's stunning.
Yeah, just don't buy your decanters from a hospital supplies shop. Or you might be in for something that tastes more of a medical sample than a fine wine. Anyway, on that very elegant note, it only remains for me to thank Michael Oliphant, who once again has dispensed wit, wisdom, and wine. Michael, lovely as always to chat to you again.
John, thank you so much.
And here in Joburg, with me in the studio, to Malcolm McDonald. Great. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks, John. Great to be here.
And to Jeremy Sampson.
Goodbye.
And to Jeff.
Great to be here, John.
And last, certainly not least, to Dino Fagus. Lovely to see you again, Dino.
Thank you, John. Nice to be here.
I'm John Fraser. That was Divine Intervention.